This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana. Signature support from the office of Mayor President Sharon Weston Broome, East Baton Rouge Parish, and the show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Robin Dow producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. We begin with Mike Berto, Chief Healthcare Economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana. He's been doing his thing with Blue Cross now for 20 years. And he's been with us at least 20 times through the years, but he hasn't been with us too much of late. And let's get the elephant out of the room, and then we'll move on to other things. There was this proposed merger that looked like it was going to happen, in which Elevance would become the parent company, and it did not happen. Is it business as usual now?
Absolutely. We are rapidly pursuing all of the things we need to do. I feel good about the future. Very good.
Very good. And we're glad that Mike Berto is still in the game, but I suspect you would have been even under a new entity.
Yep. Never had those conversations. I just do my job and add value where I can.
Put your head down and keep going.
Amen,
and,
brother. That's
and,
it.
And he was with us 14 years ago when the Affordable Care Act was signed.
Yes. Yes.
Isn't that something?
It's
14
been a
years.
Wild ride, I'll tell
President
you.
President Barack Obama, I think it was March 21st. I think that was the date.
Yep. 23, 2010. I remember it like it was
okay.
yesterday.
Okay. Well, wouldn't be the first time I was 2 days off, but March 23rd, 2010. I had a big event in my life, a business acquisition on March 22nd, and I knew it was one day removed, and I went the other direction.
Awesome.
So actually, we were a little bit ahead of the Affordable Care Act. Now, 40 states have embraced it, including Louisiana, and it was John Bel Edwards, and Jeff Landry has indicated he's going to keep it in place because we have perhaps the largest proportion of citizens who benefit from this. But many poor states in the South have not, including Texas and Mississippi and
yep.
Alabama
Florida.
And Georgia and Florida and South Carolina.
Kind of like the SEC, you know, minus Louisiana.
And Arkansas.
And Arkansas. That's
Arkansas.
Right.
A Republican governor actually took it in Arkansas.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the Medicaid expansion was an opportunity for a state to draw down an enormous amount of federal money. At a ratio that was unheard of in Medicaid. Most Medicaid programs were pre-ACA 50-50 funded, 50% federal, 50% state. The ACA offered a new category of eligibility at 90% federal and only 10% state. And that really was, you know, mother's milk to a lot of states with people who were uninsured.
877-217-5757 is your number. Talk at talklouisiana.org is our email address, and Mike Berto is our guest. He knows the healthcare world like few others, and you can find out much more about what he does and pontificates about it. Straight Talk Louisiana, that's straighttalkla.com. But the rage of late is Ozempic and similar drugs, which are designed to supposedly help with diabetes, but now people are taking them just for weight loss. And in Louisiana, we have this preponderance of heavy people who have benefited to some degree by large amounts from they've lost a lot of weight.
Yep.
And they've done it through these drugs. There is a price, and there is the concern about what happens long term. So what about that?
Yep. Well, about a year ago, when I started to study, the drugs are called GLP-1s, glucagon-like peptide, fancy name for a drug that essentially sort of rewires your brain to make hunger less intense, mm-hmm. to make the insulin you produce more efficient, and to slow down your digestive system so that you don't have this need to fill your stomach as quickly as you did before. Now, we've done very serious multi-leveled analysis on the coverage of those drugs. And for people who are type 2 diabetics, they are a godsend, really. We've covered them for type 2 diabetes for a long time. And I have family members who I can tell you are achieving glucose control like they never achieved on insulin and all these other drugs. And then they lost weight kind of as a side effect of the fact that they were getting their diabetes under control. But when we started to do the analysis on providing the drugs for people who were not diabetic, the financials go upside down very quickly. It's the equivalent of applying an $1,100 a month solution to a $200 a month problem. is the best way I can describe it. And so what you have to find are about 80 to 90% of the people have private insurance. It's funded by an employer, right? And so you've got to convince employers that in the long term, this is going to be worth their while. And unfortunately, there's very little, no evidence to support the fact that anybody will ultimately save money on GLP-1 coverage for non-diabetics under the current U.S. pricing. Now, to be fair, pharma is charging 400% for these drugs of what they charge the U.K. or Germany. So if I could get the U.K. contract for Wegovy, for example, which is about $230 a month, if I could get that here, we'd have a very different conversation about whether or not carriers could cover GLP-1s. But the reality is the pricing here is more like $900 or $1,000 a month, and the numbers never work out. You never get enough savings from people losing the weight to come anywhere near covering the cost of the drugs. Yeah, you know, the employer group, the North Carolina Public Plan, the one that covers all their state employees, did a three-year pilot of covering the drugs for obese people. They let 25,000 people enroll. And by the end of the third year, they were in the hole over $100 million a year.
Because of those drugs.
Because of those drugs. And so they discontinued the coverage for the non-diabetics. And that's kind of where we are right now. There are bills in the legislature this session that are seeking to require carriers to cover these drugs for the non-diabetics. I will tell you, the rate increases from those could be substantial.
As far as how they work, I've seen people lose a lot of weight. But,
me too.
But what if you stop taking the drug?
Well, because of the way they rewire your body, if during the period you're taking the drug, you don't embrace a new lifestyle, and your doctor will tell you this just like I can, where you're more active and you embrace a better diet, when you stop taking the drugs, if you haven't done that, when you stop taking the drugs, about 85% of the people, the weight comes back within 6 to 9 months. So if you're not going to use it as a stepping stone to change your life, it's unlikely you'll be able to keep the weight off when you stop taking the drugs.
So we're talking $1,100 a month.
Yep.
That's $13,200 a year.
Thereabouts, yes.
And let's say you do that for 5 years.
Right.
That's $66,000.
Yes.
And then if you suddenly quit taking the drug, you're telling me you're going to be pretty much back where you started unless you're really determined.
Change your diet and exercise.
Which you could do right now.
Absolutely. You don't really need the drug to do that. I've done it for a little while. But the idea is that the drug might give you a leg up to get started down that path. We might be able to have that conversation one day when the price is rationalized.
And what about long-term effects?
Well, there are scattered effects, scattered reports of people because their digestive system slows down. About 2 to 3% of the population have a condition called gastroparesis, which basically means their stomach doesn't empty as fast as it would normally. When you put a GLP-1 on top of that, it can cause downstream digestive problems that are a little too graphic to talk about on the radio, but things that you really don't want to fool with. Some of the other side effects, most of the people who take them get a little nausea, they get some stomach upset, they might feel weak the day after they take their shot. It's just one shot a week. So it's a much easier proposition for a diabetic, for instance, than trying to monitor insulin 24/7. But that's the experience we've had. The really long-term effects, we're not that sure about. There are some indications that people who have already had a cardiac event or a stroke who are obese could benefit from taking the drugs downstream of the heart attack or the stroke. So we're looking into that very intensely right now.
877-217-5757 is your number. And Mike Berto, Chief Healthcare Economist for Blue Cross Blue Shield Louisiana. He not only knows the bean counting at healthcare facilities and provide insurance, but he also, as you can hear, is an authority of sorts on health in general. Let's go to Jim on I-12. Hello, Jim. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. So those of us who are pre-diabetic, the whole point is that just wait until we become full diabetic before you'll cover it and sentence us to that hell. So, you know, yeah, this is why universal health care needs to happen, and y'all need to be kicked to the curb.
Well, I would never suggest such a thing. What I'm talking about, and I'm speaking as a fellow pre-diabetic who also does not have GLP-1s covered for his condition. 20 years now, I've been on metformin, for example, to control my pre-diabetes, and it has worked beautifully. What I'm talking about is the embrace of the cost over a large population. If employers want to try this and sponsor it, of course, we'll support whatever they want to do. Self-funded employers, a few of them in Louisiana, are trying the drug. Unfortunately, the pricing is so out of whack with the value of the drug for a non-diabetic that at this point, those employers who've embraced the drug within a year or two are starting to go the other direction. They're looking at the cost, they're looking at the benefit, and they're just not seeing the value. And that's the tricky part. Unfortunately, so many people are buying the drugs outside of their health plan, the prices are still going up.
And we'll be back after this. This is Jim Inkster, and you are listening to Talk Louisiana. Thank you for joining us, and Robin Dow's producing. If you'd like to give her a call, she'll probably pump you right through, pipe you right through at 877-217-5757. Amber in the Garden District, you're on with Mike Berto, Chief Healthcare Economist, Blue Cross Blue Shield. Hi, Amber.
Hi. I wanted to talk about a recent incident that I had with Blue Cross Blue Shield as my carrier. It took me months of fighting to get a prior authorization for a MRI of my lower back. But before that, I received a call from a group out of Chicago on your behalf that wanted me to drive to Gray, Louisiana, telling me it would save Blue Cross Blue Shield money for me to drive to Gray, Louisiana and have an MRI done.
Wow. Can I ask who your employer is?
All right. Amber, you still there?
I think it's best if I don't reveal my employer.
I'm sorry.
But I will. I can call you off the record. And
yeah,
I'll tell you
I'll be
my
happy
employer
to talk
is.
About okay. it. That sounds like, and I'm not 100% sure, but I'm happy to check for you. That sounds like a program that a self-funded employer would contract for on the side to try to help their self-funded plan save a few bucks. And it's not something we would control or have influence over. Remember, in the group world, you have employers that are buying insurance directly from us. They're fully insured members, and we set the rules for those plans mm-hmm. based on state and federal regs. You also have employers who we contract with to kind of put them in the insurance mm-hmm. business, and they control what's covered and how it's covered. And so we support both types enormously. Some we have a lot of influence over, some we have less. But I'm happy to talk to you about that offline if y'all can get her contact info.
Well, okay. And do you mind giving your, I don't think you want to give your phone number, but you have email, I think.
You can email me, anybody. My email is michael.berto, my first name.
B-E-R-T-A-U-T.
Dot my last name, at bcbsla.com, Blue okay. Cross Blue Shield, Louisiana.
All right.
And you should always feel free to email me about these things.
All right. Now, a listener, this is Hal in Monroe, asked about gastric bypass surgery. In the old days, that also reduces glucose numbers, I'm told, dramatically. And it's the same deal where people have it, it works, and then they go back to their old ways, and then boom, they're overweight again. So, and have glucose and sugar and diabetes issues. So, but what about insurance? Does insurance cover that kind of surgery?
Most insurance plans have a path that can lead to gastric bypass surgery. It might not be the first line of defense because it's surgery, you know, and it's essentially a choice whether you get it or not. But I found in this day and age, more and more carriers are providing a path to gastric bypass surgery.
Daryl in Mid-City says, no discussion of the global epidemic of obesity is complete without discussing food policy and the role of corporate agriculture in setting it. What about...
Well, I'm not really an expert on that, but I will tell you that I do think that our food choices on a day-to-day basis and how easy some foods mm-hmm. are to get versus others certainly contribute to our current health status. No doubt about that. Mm-hmm.
At what point is Ozempic, like, somebody who's right at the level of the danger zone, like has glucose that's 98, 98. Is that an Ozempic candidate, or is it have to be like at 120 or more?
At the moment, what we look for is a doctor's diagnosis of type 2 diabetes. And there are very, very well understood parameters for that out there in the world. And it might not be the GLP-1 drug might not be the first drug you want to take in that situation. But it's in the arsenal, and we do cover it for type 2 diabetics.
Okay, 877-217-5757. Still time to get in with Mike Berto of Blue Cross Blue Shield, Louisiana. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hello, Phil.
Hello, Jim. Yes, sir. I have a Blue Cross Blue Shield Plan B or Plan C, whatever it is, as part of my Medicare. And what I'm finding out is that these for-profit insurance companies who are using Medicare, when I call around to see who accepts Medicare, people turn those down. And I don't understand why why it's possible.
Well, it's a great question. Always, anytime you're buying any health insurance product, whether it's a healthcare.gov policy and you're under 65, or you're enrolling in an employer's plan, or you're choosing a Medicare Advantage plan, always make sure before you sign the paper or push the button that the doctors you use, the hospitals you want to use, and the drugs you're already taking are covered under that plan. It's a huge problem. There are a lot of products in the marketplace with networks and formularies that are very small. Typically, if you get a Blue Cross plan and it's got a PPO or an HMO network in Louisiana, you're going to be golden. You're going to have a lot of coverage. You're going to be in great shape. If it's PPO, you'll have a national network. You can go to doctors all over the country. But these are the kind of things you've got to drill through ahead of time. If you're already on a Medicare Advantage plan, every year from October to December is a no file, no penalty, open enrollment period where you can move to a different plan that better suits your needs. And if you need to do that, I would recommend you use an agent. Don't try to do it yourself. It's a minefield because of all the choices. Why not use an expert that doesn't charge to do the work and you're under no obligation to buy anything? I highly recommend using an agent for those choices.
Patricia in Magnolia Woods, you are on with Mike. Hi, Patricia.
Hey, good morning. Just a little bit before my question, Ms. Robin Dow said that it was okay for me to mention today is LSU Giving Day. Giving Day.
All right.
Yes, I saw that.
What's your question?
The question is,
what's your question?
I was wondering if you can comment on fail first method of keeping people from getting effective migraine medication.
I'm not sure I understood.
I'm not sure either. Let's go to David in Atlanta. Yeah. David, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
It's David.
Good morning, gentlemen. Before I get to my question, I recently had abdominal surgery in Atlanta, and the hospital bills $88,000, and all the charges haven't come through yet. So that shows the need why people have to have good health care. Now, my question for Mr. Berto is, Donald Trump said he would repeal Obamacare, and he has proposed nothing concrete to replace it. He has something better. Now, on the other hand, Paul Krugman, economist, Princeton economist professor, Nobel Economics Prize winner, he said there is nothing better than Obamacare. Now, my question for Mr. Berto is, would you believe Paul Krugman, or would you believe...
All right. Well, Krugman is a leftist, and I love him. He's a Nobel Prize winner. You're correct. A brilliant man. But he, of course, speaks from a political slant, as does Donald Trump, who almost got success in having Obamacare repealed, one vote away, and Bill Cassidy signed on to Trump. Then those two were kissing cousins. They later split the sheets, but it is a political element. But now changing the way things are done would probably mean disaster as far as how people would respond, Mike.
Yeah, we're 14 years in, as you mentioned earlier. How many times have you and I sat here and discussed lawsuits against the ACA, legislative actions against it? It has survived. And the reason is because the core of the Affordable Care Act is authority. It drew back to Washington, D.C., authority over the health insurance marketplace that had been distributed to the states. And D.C. is not going to give up that authority. They use it to improve, air quotes, health insurance all the time. So I'm not worried about that.
Not worried about that, but we'll see. I would imagine if Trump were to get rid of it, he would probably reinstitute something very similar under a different name. It would probably be Trump Care rather than Obamacare.
I wouldn't want my name on any of it. Let's just let it be law and roll with that.
But, you know, it drove conservatives crazy when Obama embraced it and said, yeah, let's call it Obamacare. They were calling it Obamacare. He said, yeah, let's do it. I like that. Let's do it.
I was impressed with that statement.
And that is the signature event in the 8 years of President Obama's presidency. There were other big things, but that one was a huge one, as we know, and it is one that has stayed the course and is unlikely to be changed dramatically, even if President Trump wanted it to be, and apparently he does. But it should be a campaign issue, and it should be. 877-217-5757 is your number. We'll return with more Talk Louisiana after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, Robin Dow producing, and we're joined now by baseball great, a true original, Denny McClain, the last person to win 30 games in a season. He won 55 over two seasons. Those records have not been equaled since 1968 and 69, and the two-time Cy Young Award winner and most valuable player in 1968, the year of the Tigers in baseball. Denny McClain is with us. Your number, 877-217-5757. And good morning, Denny McClain.
Jimmy, how are you, pal?
I'm fine. It's always great to talk to number 17.
And it's been a while.
Yesterday, we talked with Diana Ross, who turned 80 years old yesterday.
Oh,
we didn't talk to her. We talked about her.
One of my favorites of all time.
We talked about her, not to her. Maybe I was talking to her, but she wasn't answering. But at any rate, she's 3 days older than you, and both of you ruled Detroit at the same time.
Well, she looks older than I do, too, I think. That's a joke.
Maybe.
A joke.
Maybe.
And if Diana's, God forbid, Diana's listening, how are you? Happy birthday and all the other things. I met her years ago in Detroit, she was quite a princess then, and she became the queen of queens. And my reaction with her was always very nice. A couple of times that I met her, as much like most of the Motown kids were, they were all about everybody eager to do what they needed to do to be what they wanted to be.
Well, Detroit is a big city now and one of the nation's most important. But then it was the center of the universe for music, for sports, and you were right there, and you were 24, as was she in 1968. And to have that kind of fame and adulation, acclaim at that age, it's a kind of a good thing, bad thing, isn't it?
It's a good thing, bad thing. But I think we all. Down deep, I think we all seek the public stage, whether that's a baseball park or whether that's a stage, literally. I think we seek that. Now, we may get a little upset at dinner. Some people will. Somebody will come over for an autograph. I've seen a lot of players, a lot of entertainers say, listen, I can't sign now. I won't sign till after dinner. Can't you see I'm eating my dinner? You know, I've always felt that just because you are in the life that you are and you owe everything to those people who buy the tickets, there's never a bad time to sign an autograph. Never. And it gets me so big. And I could sit here for hours and tell you about the guys that would shock you who are a little bit negative when someone comes up to ask them for an autograph. And I'm not talking stars. I'm talking superstars.
Well, in your day, you had side jobs, and Denny, at the age of 24, was not only the top pitcher in the game, he was one of the top organists in his game. He was a pilot. You were living large, weren't you?
Living pretty large, yep. I've had two bad things that happened in my life. My daughter got killed by a drunken truck driver, and of course, I just lost my wife 2 years ago. So outside of that, I've had a wonderful life. I've got 12, and listen to this now, I've got 12 granddaughters, 12. and I've got one grandson who was just announced the other day. I'm going to be a great grandfather in about 7 months. So lots still going on in the McLean household.
Well, you started early. Your father-in-law was a baseball Hall of Famer. And you grew up in the Chicago area, and you were destined to be a member of the White Sox, and then something happened.
Yeah, we had, back in those days, in the early 60s, they had some crazy laws. And you could only have three first-year players who were getting major league contracts under the 40-man contract. Now, those three guys, you could only have two of the three. So one guy had to go, and the White Sox, all of a sudden, excuse me, I got some phlegm, and the White Sox decided that they were going to pitch myself and Bruce Howard against each other, who really was a good pitcher. The other guy who was not going to be a part of that trio was Dave DeBuscher, who became a major league pitcher. He was the president. He was an All-American, NBA football, basketball player, and the president, I think, for 10 or 15 years of the New York Knicks. Dave DeBuscher was a real guy.
He was.
And Dave was 6. Yeah, he really was 6'7", 6'8". So they pitched him and I against each other. I gave up a home run on the first pitch of the game. And I got beat 1-0. And the loser was going to be put on waivers. And as they say, the rest is history. As I got beat 1-0. And about 20 minutes after the game was over, it was announced to me that I had been drafted by the Detroit Tigers. And as they say, the rest is history.
Yep. You were a major leaguer at 19 years old. And that's been a little while. And Denny, of course, was the top player in the game in the late 60s and barely eclipsed 100,000. Did you ever get to 200,000 in a season?
No. I got to about 135 one year, maybe 2 years in a row. And that, you know, that seemed like a lot of money back then. But when you think about it today, the major league minimum today is $750,000 for a first-year player. When he steps on that field, when opening day happens, when he steps on that field, all the rookies are making the rate of $750,000 a year. Not a bad way to start a career.
Well, the biggest star and highest-paid player in baseball now is involved in a burgeoning sports betting scandal. There's question, as has been reported by many writers, including Alex Kirshner of Slate, about where that involvement sits on a sliding scale. Had Shohei Ohtani been an inveterate gambler racking up millions in debt to an unlicensed bookie in California? Had Ohtani just been an astonishingly good friend paying the debt of a close confidant who had gotten in over his skis? That's the way Mr. Kirshner puts it. And was the truth some combination of the two? But if he was involved in gambling in any way, shape, or form, I would imagine he has to get the Pete Rose treatment, Denny McLean.
Well, he's going to get the Denny McLean treatment, too, because this Denny McLean got suspended for an entire year because I was working for Pepsi-Cola at the time. And a man by the name of Ed Schober, who was a senior VP with Pepsi, came to me and said, I need to borrow $40,000. He says, I've lost a whole bunch of money on the races and some basketball. And I said, I know a guy who'll loan you the $40,000. All I did was introduce Ed Schober, and this is all documented. I introduced Ed Schober to a guy who would loan him $40,000 at a usurious interest rate, and Ed got the money. I got suspended for an introduction. Now, my question is, all I did was loan the guy $40,000. This looks like one guy loaned the other guy $5 million. Now, I want to see how this is going to be treated because, boy, they have got a worm here, a big worm here that they're going to have to treat. And you cannot, with all due respect, and I've been around the hustlers in life all of my life, and you know that. And the bottom line is, if you are telling me that you are paying off somebody's debt for $300, $400, $5 million, don't try to sell that piece of property to me because you're intimately involved when you're paying off something for $5 million. Nobody wants to pay off a debt for $5 million. $5 million, we're not talking $50,000, $5,000, $50. We're talking $5 million. Now, I want to find somebody out there that would loan anybody $5 million who doesn't have a pot to pee in. And from that point forward, now what's he do? Now he's been thrown out of baseball, lost the job, and now what are they going to do with Ohtani? If they let him walk, it sends an awful, awful message.
But baseball has an awful lot invested in him, doesn't it?
Oh, boy. Listen, he is selling seats like they're going out of style. I don't know what this has done for his tag now, his brand, as some people call it. But I and I'm anxious to see. But I think he'll have at least the crowds in L.A. are still going to be tremendous. I don't know if that will continue throughout the rest of the league. And then to see what I'm looking at is to see how long they are going to play this hand. And the longer they string it out, the longer it has a tendency to kind of become less important. So I just want to see how quick they're going to wrap this up, because it would really be unfair to Ohtani also. But I'm just afraid that they're about to blow this one major league style-wise. Nobody wants to pay off a debt for $5 million. I don't care. You can be deaf and dumb and dumber than dumb. You're not paying off a debt for $5 million unless you had something to do with it.
A listener notes that your former Detroit stalwart played in the NFL, Alex Karras, was suspended for a year.
Yes.
And it was for a few dollars gambling here and there, I understand.
It was a couple of dollars, him and Paul Hornung. We were all shocked at the time because it was more of a local bet at the something AC. I can't remember the name of the bar, but it was a bar downtown Detroit, and that's where Alex made his bets and on behalf of one or two other players. But the bottom line was, it was $50. It was $100. We're talking tens of millions here. I mean, at least $5 million, and God only knows. Here's what I always said. Somebody said, well, Pete Rose only owed $100,000. Well, the truth came out, and he owed over $600,000. So my first reaction to this was, $5 million? I'll bet it's $10 or $20 million.
All right.
This guy's got it. That's the kicker.
Well, but people are saying he's got $700 million. He didn't have $700 million contract when this was going on. He was making $85,000.
Oh, no.
Because he was in the early part of his career. So I would imagine he had to know about something that was around $5 million.
If it is his best friend in the world, the interpreter, why would you let him just keep going and going and going? It's because you got your ass in this thing and you don't know how to get out of it.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, and we'll spend a few more minutes with the remarkable Denny McClain. And when I say remarkable, this man has crammed about five lives into one, and he's with us for a few more minutes, number 17, Dennis Dale McClain, after this timeout on Talk Louisiana. We're wrapping it up with Dennis Dale McClain. On deck is Abby Ledoux of Planned Parenthood. And Denny McClain, I'm sure he recognizes Mercy, Mercy Me, Marvin Gaye, 1967, when the Tigers lost by one game to the Boston Red Sox in the year of 67. And if they had won the pennant then, they would have played the Cardinals a year earlier. And remember, Boston took St. Louis to seven games in 1967. But Denny McClain was the best. Bob Gibson was the best in the National League, and they converged in 68. And a listener notes, Denny, you even converged on the Ed Sullivan Show with Bob Gibson. People thought the two of you didn't care for each other. Was there any truth to that, or were you two?
No, that's not true. Bob just had this grimace on his face all the time. I think part of it is the way he was treated coming up through minor league baseball. I don't think there's any question. I know when I first got to the big leagues, we had to let the black, when we were playing down south somewhere or towards the south, we had to let the black players off at a rooming house. The hotels would not take the black. It was ridiculous. Willie Horton and Gates Brown and Jake Wood, all these, the poor black guys had to stay at a different place. And I suppose Bob had some of that in him, but Bob was a real nice guy, a gracious guy. He gave a lot of money to charity and appeared at probably 10 million charities over his career. But he got this because Bob liked the guys, would like to knock the guys down on their butts. And when you get that kind of a reputation, everybody thinks the next pitch has got your name on it.
And it worked to his benefit.
Absolutely. I mean, listen, if you can't throw the ball inside like they can't today, you can't win. I mean, you have to protect. Which part of the plate are you going to protect? The outside part or the inside?
Mm-hmm.
Now they've taken the inside away from the pitchers, and the pitchers can only protect now the outside unless you got great stuff. And you doesn't make any difference where you throw that fastball. But if you don't get a chance to knock players down, they own you. They own their stance. They own everything about the game at that point in time. The difference is the caliber and the premium of hitting today. It's not there. It's not the way it used to be. We don't have the LK lines anymore, the Mickey Mantles. We don't have any of that. And certainly the pitching has been really, really dramatically changed.
Well. Lastly, I was looking at some of Gibson's numbers recently. Over his career, he averaged 8 innings a start.
Sure.
But he pitched in a 5-man rotation. You did not. You pitched in four-man rotation. And in 1968 and 69, you had 82 starts. You had 51 completes and 15 shutouts in those two seasons, and you averaged 8.1 innings a start, and you were 24-25. No way today would they take a chance on ruining the arm of the crown jewel of an organization, and I guess that's exactly what happened to you, isn't it?
Well, that's exactly what happened, because we even pitched at times if we were in a pennant race, we pitched on 2 days' rest. Not often, but just enough to make sure the starting rotation was still tight and we had a chance to win if we had a 3-game series that we had a shot at winning 2-3 or 2-3 or 3-3. I mean, today, if all we had a pitch is, if we had a pitch, I keep telling everybody this, nobody believes it, but if we could have only pitched 5 innings back when I played, I'd still be pitching, Jim.
I don't think there's any doubt that you would have lasted a lot longer. And it's amazing, though, they still break down, and I think one of the reasons is they're throwing so many breaking pitches. You relied mostly on a fastball, didn't you?
Most of the pitchers I played with all had great fastballs, and the idea of the breaking ball, here's the problem. You've got all these ding-dang minor league, not minor league guys, but high school and college coaches trying to have these kids throw breaking balls. Listen, if you're going to play in high school and college, you can throw any kind of a breaking ball, and you're effective. I mean, we got Mize. And Mize, if he didn't have that little curveball that he threw in college, he wouldn't have won 10 games as far as I'm concerned. Now he comes up to the big leagues. All of a sudden, he's put under pressure. He's stressful. And all of a sudden, he's had 2 operations already. So and where does that guy wind up? They gave him $8 million. They say he's throwing well. Well, no one's seen him throw well yet, and we've had him here now for 5 years.
Well, Denny, we're always delighted to talk to number 17, and happy birthday to you. And we'll be calling again soon. I love what you've done in reinventing yourself so many times. And
you've
always been glib and garrulous. That was a word I learned about some sports writer who wrote about you, calling you garrulous, Denny McClain.
Garrulous.
Thank you, sir.
I'll look that up. And by the way, I love Louisiana, as you know, and I'll see some friends of mine down there pretty soon.
Well, I hope to see you, my friend. Take care.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you.
Bye. Abby Ledoux is with us. She is with Planned Parenthood Gulf Coast. And as we know, abortion rights are in the news locally, nationally. It is the major issue, perhaps, in the 2024 presidential campaign. And at the state capitol, there are some offerings that are on the table, including one today. But before we get there, the U.S. Supreme Court has medication abortions on its table. And I have read in numerous places that more than 60% of the abortions in America are done this way. And, of course, those medications are illegal in states like Louisiana. But Abby Ledoux, what's your take on how the high court may receive this searing issue in our country?
Yeah. Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me. I think after yesterday's oral arguments at the Supreme Court, it's really even clearer that we just shouldn't be here. This case, it was built on lies about science from plaintiffs who brought the case, including 2 studies they cited that were recently retracted from medical journals. And it's clear that their real objection is, you know, to our autonomy and our freedom to make our own decisions. So I think, you know, a majority of the justices seemed skeptical of those arguments. So we're hopeful that they will do the right thing and put an end to this case and not mess with the FDA's expertise and judgment, which could also put all medications, regardless of what they do, beyond abortion care, beyond miscarriage care, in the political crosshairs. So we're hopeful, but again, we shouldn't be here in the first place. This is a safe and effective medication that's been used for more than 20 years in this country by millions of people, and as you mentioned, in the majority of abortions in America.
Well, for years, I would interview people who were against abortion rights, anti-abortion, and they would say they want to shut down these abortion mills, as they would call them, saying that these people were in it for money and that they were enriching themselves, although abortions, at the time that I started covering the issue, they were about $200 each. That's more than that now, but you can have an abortion for much less than you can have a tooth removed, for example. But nonetheless, these pills that are available, the medication has in some ways made clinics obsolete. It would seem that those who were against clinics would perhaps be receptive to another way of doing this, but I think it comes down to the fact that they're just against abortion. What are your thoughts, Abby?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. The majority of abortions are medication abortions, as you cited, because I think people like the option of being able to make this decision and have this experience in the comfort of their own homes or wherever they choose with whomever they choose to have around them. For some people, it's difficult. For some people, it's not. All those experiences are valid. The abortion pill is used effectively to end an early pregnancy up to 11 weeks. So of course, we know there are folks who need care after that and would then, need to get an in-clinic abortion or a surgical abortion, particularly for things like fetal anomalies that are often not even discovered until the 20-week ultrasound. So it's not an answer to the abortion bans that we see around this country, but it is an option, and it is really important for people to have all of their options available to them, whatever they choose and whatever's best for their bodies and their health and their experiences.
Abby Ledoux of Planned Parenthood Gulf Coast is with us for a few more minutes as we round out the hour with her. Rebel in Sherwood, please be concise. Rebel, you're on with Abby.
Hi, thank you so much, Jim, and thank you, ma'am. Ma'am, I heard about a study recently after the Dodge decision. Apparently, according to this study, as many as 65,000 women and girls have been forced to carry their rapist babies in these fascist red states like Louisiana. What are your comments on that, and how much more damage to women's health care is being done by these laws?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that question. That was an extremely concerning number that I also saw and really devastating. We know that right now in Louisiana and in other states where abortion is completely banned and has no exceptions for survivors of rape and incest and sexual assault, people are being forced to carry pregnancies against their will. That's inhumane no matter how it happened or why it happened. But particularly for survivors of sexual assault, they really need and deserve autonomy over their own body after it's been violated. So there are attempts to mitigate this harm and to at least begin to add some exceptions to this ban. We're seeing them again this session in the legislature, but we know that most of the lawmakers there are hostile to our rights, to our freedoms. And, we're hopeful that we'll get some harm mitigation, but we don't know. And honestly, we keep seeing more and more of these horrible situations. And really, the cruelty is the point, I think, for a lot of these lawmakers who are against abortion. It's not about protecting lives. It's not about saving lives or helping women. It's about power and control.
In Louisiana, we had an opportunity to put this to a vote of the people, but that was denied by the legislature a few days ago. There is an event on April 4th in Baton Rouge. Are you involved with this?
Yes. Our April 4th event, if you're referring to that, is our Baton Rouge Spring event at Planned Parenthood Gulf Coast. It's our annual fundraiser and community event in Baton Rouge. We're bringing together folks across the movement, patients, providers, advocates, to really rally for our freedom and to celebrate the work we've done. We're celebrating 40 years of Planned Parenthood in Louisiana. So that's what that event is all about. It's on this coming Thursday, April 4th. Folks can learn more and get tickets still at ppgulfcoast.org/BR event.
Well, we thank you for joining us, Abby Ledoux from Planned Parenthood Gulf Coast. This issue remains one of the searing ones in this land, and we will continue to talk about it with people representing the various sides of the issue. Thanks again, Abby.
Thanks so much.
That's it today. Thank you for listening. Signature support from the mayor's office. Back tomorrow.